everyone. Welcome all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 147 is coming at you right now on its way. This one is entitled Long Have I Waited. All right, everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can check out our Facebook page, The Portal, or on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you'll find me. I am your host for this episode, The Brant, and excited to bring this one to you. Portal Game Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Howdy, everybody. Happy March. I would say happy spring here in New England, but it has been spring-like all winter, so we're in the 50s and 60s, but we've been in the 40s and 50s, which maybe to other people listening, that's freezing cold, but that's pretty warm here. That's above 0 degrees Celsius, which usually we are below 0 degrees Celsius if you live outside the United States. So, that's where we've been at, so it's been pretty nice in terms of all that. But had some really, really nice spring-like days here already, so I guess it's on its way. And we start thinking about spring and convention season and summer and traveling and just lots of new game releases that are already starting to be announced. I did not get a chance to go down to the New York Toy Fair, but Brian did go down for a couple days, so he got a chance to see a whole bunch of stuff and whatnot. I don't think any announcements were too big. I mean, there were definitely some exciting games, but nothing... nothing to make a whole episode out of here or whatever, but it should be exciting. So, we'll see how all that goes. Let's see. This episode, I'm going to review a bunch of games for you, as I do. And then, I'm going to go over some of my other favorite games from 2019, as I had promised several episodes ago that I would do that, kind of the reason for the long have I waited title. So, we'll work our way through those and go from there. What else is new? I don't think too much. We were playing a lot of Marvel Champions, and that's kind of slowed down at the store. It's been tricky for me. Thursdays don't work anymore, so I haven't really been down at the store, but I have been playing a lot of games. I've started a game night at my house, actually, on, it was Sundays, now Saturdays, so that's been happening. So kind of going from there. So, we shall see. Other than that, let's jump into some games. So, first one up here is a solo game. This is a game called Proving Grounds from Kane Klenko and Renegade Game Studios. So, in Proving Grounds, it is basically a timed dice fest. You are like a gladiator in an arena trying to keep yourself alive, and you've got six enemies that you're fighting, and you roll a set of dice. And you're trying to roll sets, so two ones, or three ones, or four ones, and you take all your dice and you assign them to the different enemies, and the bad sets are the ones where there's only one die. If there's one die, that enemy's going to damage you. If there's no dice at that number, at the end of 1 minute, then you will not damage them, and they will not damage you. And then if there's a set of dice, there's conditions. Each enemy says, oh, you need two dice, or you need two dice, but one has to be a blue die. There's all sorts of different conditions. What you are allowed to do during that 1 minute is reroll any sets of dice that are two or more. So you're trying to kind of pick through your two or more dice and figure out which ones you'd want to reroll and work through. Essentially, you're trying to defend off the enemies. The goal is to defeat eight of them, but it's almost like you need enough time before you take five damage, which is if the little tracker drops to the bottom. There's also like a resting spot or something where there's three dice, and so each round you slide those dice down and one will slide off, and if you're wounded, you put another die there. And if you get two wounded, you get another color die, so it gives you a little bonus for trying to beat other things. And that is basically the game. This game... it has no right to be fun. It's just rolling dice. If there was not a timer, it obviously wouldn't even be a game because you could just roll till you rolled whatever you want. But you wouldn't have that pressure. It's interesting because 20 seconds in, you get a roll where you're like, I think this is okay, and you don't want to mess with it. So you're almost like choose the non-perfect roll because you don't know if you can roll otherwise. I found it pretty fun. It felt like it had no right to be fun, but it was. It kind of reminds me of Thanos Rising, those games where you're just rolling dice trying to get the right numbers, and it's just fun. It just somehow feels thematic. You're getting lots of cards and other things. Now, there are also 6 modules, which I've read through, but I haven't played through. So, in some sense, it's not really a fair review because I know people want to hear about the modules. But I played it recently, and I wanted to talk about it. And, I mean, it was fun initially. It's neat. It has a little app that gives you the 1-minute timer, which is totally not necessary. But it also will allow you to randomize those modules. So that's definitely where I want to go with that next. And it actually takes surprisingly long. Like, you'd think, like, oh, this is a game, you're rolling dice for 1 minute, so you play, what, like 5 rounds? No, you play, like, 15 rounds. So it's, like, 15, 20 minutes, I think. It feels pretty, like, engaged. Like, you're rolling, stop the timers, reset, set this enemies, reset them, go. Like, it just feels, like, a lot on your brain. But I had a good time with it. I really like Proving Grounds, and I'm excited to try the next one, the Scott Elms Warp Gate 1 that went on Kickstarter a little while ago. So we'll get a copy of that and get a chance to play it when it comes out. Awesome. Then I played a bunch of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Change is Constant from IDW Games. So this is like a new working of the Shadows of the Past, which really had a nice mechanism with how the turtles work, but I think the AI felt a little slow and a few other things. So I've played this co-op with the kids, co-op again, with Larry and a few other people at the store, and then I was the enemy versus a few other people. And I really enjoy it. Now, I grew up with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so I definitely have that nostalgia factor. I think it's done pretty well. I mean, it is rolling dice, and it seems a little favored towards the turtles. But anyway, what happens in a round is you roll all your dice, your action dice, and then you set them, and you have 3 dice. You're going to have one on your left, one on your right, and whatever symbol is on that, you give to your neighbors. So those little chits, and they get those symbols. And then you flip over initiative cards in the co-op to see if you go or the enemies go. And in the version where somebody's playing as the bad guy, you just kind of trade back and forth. A turtle goes, and then an enemy goes. And the turtle goes, and then the enemy goes. So I'll kind of explain each of those. Basically, you're just spending those dice to do things. So, oh, I get 2 movement points. Well, how much does a movement point give me? 3 movement spaces. So I get 6 movement. And there's a bunch of terrain. You move across, and then you roll to attack. So you can split your attacks, or you can combine your attack into one big attack. And you basically just roll dice for hits, and then they roll for defense. And the difference is how many hits you score. And then there's like a mission you're trying to do. What I really like here is they gave you like a campaign, like you play in an evening, is 3 missions. So there's like a setup story, there's your middle story, and there's your final arc. And honestly, the games like that were long were an hour. Like the first time you play and you're trying to set everything up and all that, that game's going to be 2 hours. There's so much stuff because it's a huge Kickstarter. So that first initial play is going to be a whole bunch. Like if you're talking about punching, we like punched and sorted and sleeved all the cards. We did that in like an evening and then played another time. But after that, once you kind of know how to read the powers and play, like 45 minutes is what I'm thinking. So you could honestly play 3 sessions in 3 hours and you'd play a whole arc. And then the next time you could switch and somebody else could be the enemy, which you kind of lose in some of these campaign games sometimes. So I really like that element. You know, it's a dice rolling game. What's really fun is you could play a single card on your turn. So you have like a set of cards as the turtles and you could just play a card that does like a power up ability using some of your symbols that you rolled. And, you know, there's a few other things with blocking and other powers and terrain, but that's basically it, trying to do whatever the map says. There's a respawn. The enemy, the AI is nice because now in this one, the AI doesn't roll dice. So they just have fixed defense, fixed health, and fixed damage. So they just deal 2 damage to you, and then you roll your defense. Or you deal 3 damage to them, and they block 2, and they take 1. So it makes it really, really easy to not get overwhelmed by that and just keep moving and playing your game. So I like that a lot. When you're playing as the AI, you get a set of like 5 cards and you shuffle together a 25 card deck with all the enemies that are in there. Like they tell you which decks to put in. You draw those and then you play 2 cards on a turn and you can't activate the same model twice. So a card might say, oh, activate 2 foot soldiers. And now another one says, activate another 1 foot soldier with this big power up. But you can't use one of the ones you just did. And you've got various enemies on the board with powers and abilities. They're a little overwhelming at first, but basically once you use an ability once, it doesn't feel like, oh, I don't understand how this works. So they're really nice and straightforward, which was good. So probably the biggest downfall, which is always so funny because people are excited about this with Kickstarter, is we've got changes constant and we've got the Dark City or whatever it is, or City Fall, and then we've got the villain expansion and this, that, and the hero power-up and these models and minis. And so, I mean, no lie, we have the four turtles like four times or six times each, because there's all different versions of them, like going back as samurai and various versions. And then we've got all the extra characters with April O'Neil and Casey Jones and all those. And then all the enemies, Bebop and Rocksteady, you can play them as heroes instead of as enemies. And you've got them in AI mode, and you've got them in, you know, player-controlled mode. And as a hero, there's so much stuff. It really took a lot of organization, and setting up some of those can be pretty tricky. It did seem like with, like, the maps that you play and the tiles, that it was mostly like flip, 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 flip. They were pretty smart to put things in the same. But I'm sure as you work through there, and there's so many missions. I mean, each of these big boxes comes with a book that's got to have, I don't know, six or eight different campaigns, which is somewhere between 18 and 24 missions, and there's two of those, and then every one of those expansions comes with another, like, three or four. So, I mean, you've got to be upwards of 60 missions that you can play. Now, that's awesome for replayability, but for storing all the stuff that goes with all that and finding all the hero cards and all this, we had to organize it pretty well. But I think once you play it and you organize it, it wasn't too bad to pull everything out. And certainly for me, I would know, like, hey, I'm going to play this when people come over, so I'm going to pull everything out now. I still enjoyed it outside of that. Kind of that Gloomhaven. There's a lot to set up, but it's still really fun. But this is light. This is not strategy decisions. This is just, let me try to use this power, take that one out. The heroes seem to be a little more powerful than the villains and whatnot. And the AI was neat. I really like how it's static, although that can be frustrating if you're like, I roll two hits. They always block two. Oh, well. And in the very first mission that we played, Allopex, she had like an auto block, like she just rolls a die and on a 1 in 3 chance blocks your hit. And it's like, ah, that did nothing. And that's kind of to me, that's a little lazy design on that front. But all in all, I enjoyed it. I want to keep playing it. And we play with kids and it was pretty good. I you know, kind of remove the things like you can just use this card or just roll this number of dice, like kind of just telling them what to do. Not that they couldn't make decisions, but just for ease of play. And honestly, with the kids, we played it in like 35 minutes. So that was pretty good. All right, that is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Change is constant. Next up is The Isle of Cats. I love cats. And I do love cats, although my dog is sitting behind me now. Sorry, Izzy. I love kitties and doggies. She's climbing in my lap. Okay, so this is by City of Games. This is Frank West, who made, oh, what is the other one called? City, oh no, City, I can't think of it. City of Monsters? City, everybody's yelling at me right now because they know what it is. But City of Heroes? I don't know what it is. I'm sorry. I can't remember. So I kept hearing about Isle of Cats and I wanted to play it, and we got a copy in and I was like, I gotta play this game. I gotta figure out why everybody's so excited about it, because it was tile laying and I knew there was something with card drafting, and I wasn't too sure what was exciting, but now that I played it, it's really good. This game is going to get played a whole bunch this year. It's not going to reach Wingspan heights, but think that style. I think it's really going to catch on. Now, I don't know, because of being Kickstarter and not Stonemaier, although Wingspan's been so hard to get, who knows. But the big thing with Isle of Cats, the theme is very funny. It's like you're trying to go to this island where there's a whole bunch of cats and you want to rescue them because there's this evil villain who is from the other city game. And he's coming to take out all the cats or take out the island. So you need to get there and rescue them. But not only do you need to rescue them, of all your friends, you want to rescue them the best. So it's a victory point game. So essentially what's happening is at the beginning of the round, you'll lay out a whole bunch of new polyomino cats. And they come in various different colors. I think 5 different colors. And then there's a wild. The Oshix is a wild colored cat. And so you lay a bunch out based on player count, and then you deal out 7 cards, and everybody gets 20 fish, and fish is your currency. And then you, like, draft the cards. You keep 2, pass 5, keep 2, pass 3, keep 2, pass 1. Now you got those 7 cards, but like Terraforming Mars, you then can pay to keep your cards. So everything you drafted, you don't keep. So you get to choose to pay to keep what you want. So that's really nice. You can just ditch cards that you don't really want anymore. And then after that, you're going to play like these lesson cards, which are basically, here's additional ways you're going to score at the end of the game. The basic scoring is fill in the rooms on your boat, don't have rats, and collect families of cats, which is the same color adjacent to each other. But these change the rules, like have a cat touching every empty space around the edge of your boat, or going straight across the middle, or whatever it is. And some are communal, and some are private lessons, so you'll play those cards. And then it's like a little like draft. So you're playing these basket cards that have speed on them. Everybody plays the number they want, you flip them, and then for each basket you have, you can draft a cat tile and pay for it with your fish. So you pay for the cards with fish, and you pay for the cats with fish. And whoever has the highest initiative will go first, so you kind of bid for that every round. You repeat that 5 times, and at the end of the game you score up all your points, which gets into the hundreds and 200s points, or whatever. Voila, there's your game. So it's a lot. It's like pretty heavy management of numbers and crunching and drafting and having the right number of fish and baskets, and you're always limited in some way, whether it be the space in your tableau, on your board, or the cards, or whatever. So it's a really, really interesting thing. There's not really a lot of engine building. There's a little bit of, like, get extra free baskets you can use every round or some stuff like that, but not too much there. But you start just kind of hammering on one thing, like, okay, let me collect all these rare treasures or get these cats or whatever it is, and I'm really going to try to get as many points from that as I can, which is interesting and fun. So I think this game is going to be pretty popular. You know, plays up to 6, I don't know how to be, but you got that simultaneous until you get to the cat drafting. Everything else is simultaneous, so that should be really helpful in terms of that. Yeah, I really liked the game. It was very fun, so I enjoyed that. The solo mode was really interesting because now you're going up against your sister who always likes to steal the spotlight. And so your sister lays out these cards slowly over the game and says, oh, she's going to score 5 points for these cats, 4 points, 3 points, 2 points, 1 point. So whatever cat you put on your boat, she's going to score. So you're trying to get the cats that she won't score for. And then she puts out her own lesson card. So it's really interesting. I've never seen this before. You score your own board twice. You score for your objectives and you score for your sister's objectives separately. So you're trying to score points for you and mitigate for your sister, which is a pretty somewhat easy thing to say, well, this gives me points and this doesn't give her points, or this gives me more points, but you're slowly revealing those things one per round. And I really thought the solo mode was quite clever and quite fun. So that is Isle of Cats. Next up is Stellar. This is a game from Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback, who made my game of the year last year, Fleet the Dice Game, and this is from Renegade Game Studios. So Stellar is a two-player card game where you're each looking out into the stars to try to find things up in the heavens and then write them in your journal. It's essentially a card drafting, tableau building game. So what's going to happen is let me make sure I can explain this. So on your turn, there's going to be a row of 5 cards, and you're going to draft one of those cards into your hand, and then you're going to play a card either into your telescope, which is what's looking out, which is kind of a pyramid tableau, or into your notebook. So you're going to play that card, and it's going to have a number in the upper corner, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you're going to go back to that row, and you're going to draft 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that card, and play it into the other zone. So if I play my first card and it has a 5 into my notebook, I will then draft the 5th card and put it into my telescope. Had I drafted that card at the start of my turn, I would then pull a card off the top of the deck and put that into my telescope. So right there, that drafting is just different. And this is what Matt and Ben do so well, is they just put an advanced mode onto something that seems like it should be simple, and once you know it, it is, but figuring out the numbers, like they would say it's math, and I definitely agree it's math, although it's like arithmetic, which isn't too bad to me, but it definitely makes you feel like, ah, wait, hold on, and you got to be able to take your turns back. Obviously, if you draw a card off the top of the deck, you can't do it, but you've got to, oh, wait, hold on, that's not what I wanted to do, and kind of switch and go through there. Then there's like really interesting scoring where you're trying to have like the most in each section in your telescope, as well as like collect sets and then score for your sets based on what's in your notebook. So you basically want to have a whole bunch of cards in row in your notebook and have a whole bunch in your telescope to maximize, but you're limited on space. So you're trying to decide, am I going to get one big scoring or am I going to get a bunch of medium-sized ones and then kind of beat out my opponent in a foot race in the other sections? It's really interesting, although you need to like explain the game and the scoring to somebody. So it's kind of one of those games where it's like, oh, I didn't really understand the scoring at the end of the game the first time you play. But it is not long. It says 30 minutes on the box, and it's like 20, 25 minutes. I mean, I guess 30 minutes. So you could just shuffle up and play again. But it's a really fun game. I like that one a lot. I don't know in the grand scheme of two-player games only that it will stick around. I wish it played three or four, but I also don't wish it played three or four. Because, you know, it's a nice 30-minute game, but I think it would get overwhelming with all the choices. And the board state would change so much if you had four players that the game would start to be an hour, hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. I think I would get bored and annoyed that the board state changes so much. So I totally understand why it's two-player. But again, like I said, with all the two-player games out there, I don't know how often I would play this one versus another. But it is small and compact for bringing places or whatever. Although once you lay it out on the table, it'll fill a full card table. It's not a small game there. Okay, next up is the only game I hadn't played in the top 100 games on BGG, and I played it. And now I have played all the games in the top 100 games on BGG. Why? Because I felt like it. Not because it should be anybody's goal. I was very close. I actually realized, at this point I basically had played them all. There was a point where I sought out playing them, and several of those games, like Combat Commander and Paths to Glory, went out to left the top 100. But I noticed recently somebody was doing a poll, and I was like, I'm at 99, so let me go play Nemesis. So I got a copy, and I played solo Nemesis. This is a game by Awaken Realms. It's basically Aliens, the board game, and there's different ways to play it, but it's essentially a semi-co-op. You've got like two different objectives. In solo mode, you basically just have two objectives you have to complete. But with multiplayer, you have like a corporate objective and a private objective. And at some point, you have to decide which one you're going for. In solo mode, you just have to do both. And so there are things like go to the computer and set it the navigation to go to a certain planet, whether it be back to Earth or Venus or whatever. You want that to be set to the planet you want it to be. And then you need to, you know, eliminate the aliens and get on the escape pod and set the engines. There's lots of different things going on here. So that's where the semi-co-op comes in, is that, like, you can push other players into things, and you can, like, kind of make sure your objective gets completed first, even though other people might be helping you to complete your objective. And normally I'm not a huge fan of that. It kind of works well in Dead of Winter, although it kind of also doesn't work well. But here, I would much prefer that to the solo mode. Now, I did make a mistake in my solo play, so a lot of people are still joking with me that I haven't played the game because I didn't quite understand the end of the round and spawning new enemies, and so I was able to go through. Although, you kind of like walk room to room, and you're looking for certain things, and it just so happened that everything I was looking for was right in a path, which I think was somewhat random. And I jumped, and my engines were okay. And that was the game, so I played the whole thing in like 25 minutes, and I was like, huh. But I went back to read some of that and kind of like set up a multiplayer mode. So I would actually be pretty interested in trying this. I mean, there's a lot of take that, you can die, but I think it just is what it is. It feels to me a lot like the Cthulhu Death May Die. Like, things are just happening, and you're reading special abilities, and it's exciting. It's not really my type of game. I much prefer strategy. But I could see where people like this, and I could see having a game based on aliens being really fun. So I would play it again, but I also am all set. So if people are setting it up to play it, I'll play it, but I'm not going to seek out Nemesis anymore. But it did complete my top 100, so there was that. All right, next up is Aristocracy from Reiner Knizia and Tasty Minstrel Games. So Aristocracy is a really interesting game where the lords and ladies have disappeared from the land and you decide we're going to split this land up evenly and without them, whether they've gone missing or just to take a bath or whatever it is, it's very tongue-in-cheek, but we're going to split it up so that it's in my favor. And, you know, I got to give it to Reiner Knizia. Like, to heck with theme. The theme is funny. I like that. There's just nothing here. But man, does he make a good game. This game is so fun, and it forces interaction in such a great way. So there's just a whole bunch of tiles that are laid out over 8 different lands, and they're basically sections of the land colored. And on your turn, it's so simple. You flip any 3 tiles, and then you pick any face-up tile type, of which I want to say there's 8 different tile types, and you activate all the tiles of that type, and nobody else can for the rest of the game. Like, you do whatever it is, and then they're either collected, or you place things over them, or they're gone, basically. So I flip over 3 on my turn. I flip over 2 corn and I flip over a house. I pick up the 2 corn and take them. The next person flips over a house and a sheep and wood, and they decide to activate the 2 houses. So they put houses on that location, and now the sheep and wood are available. Blah, 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 blah. So you're really only like getting 1 or 2 of the 3 tiles you flip over. So there's more and more tiles. So it makes the choices really interesting. Oh, if I don't take the corn, they're going to take the corn, so it won't come back around to me. But if I don't put my houses here, I won't complete this goal. It's great. It's just great, positive interaction. Like, I want to do both of these, but which is better and which is worse? And how do I make sure people aren't doing things? So, like, there's a kind of take that, but you pretty much always have 2 options. You just like one better. And then you're trying to figure out what's better for other people. So what are you trying to do? You're trying to collect resources. Every 9 resources you collect, you get a little tile that gives you 9 points. And then a set of 3 different resources will give you 3 points. You're trying to place houses in all the 8 lands, and you'll get 8 points. And every, like, if you could put 2 houses, 3 houses, 4 houses, you'll keep collecting 8. And then you're trying to connect, like, the center of each location to each other, and you can pick up 2 3-point tiles, as well as when you put 2 houses in a region, you get 2 points. If you put 5 houses in a region, you get another 2 points, but those go. And then there's some fish you can collect that are wild resources. There's also kings and queens that are basically the trigger for the end game. As you pull those off, you can place a house in any empty space, and they kind of go on this track. When the track fills, the game is over. That's it. It's just flip 3 tiles, activate. Flip 3 tiles, activate. It's great. I played it with 3 and with 4. It's just really fun. And you get to the end and you're like, oh, it was so close. I lost. And I can't believe it. Or, oh, that never went my way. But who cares? It was just fun and interactive. I really enjoyed Aristocracy. I love these types of games and just love that type of interaction that obviously a lot of Euros get kind of knocked for not having interaction. But I would argue this is a Euro that has an interaction. It's just not, I'm going to burn down all of your buildings and give you all these negative cards, and you could never win the game now, so you might as well just go eat a piece of pizza. It doesn't have that. Cool. All right, and then last up, the new expansion for Empires of the North just came out, the Roman Banners expansion. And I've had a chance to try these solo and then played last night. I actually used the Japanese, one of the Japanese factions, because it's like a multiplayer faction. And Kathy used one of the Roman factions. So, if you haven't seen Empires of the North, then this is a game that's like Imperial Settlers, but it just changes that you have your own specific deck just for you. And I really, really like the game. And so now they're just releasing more decks, and the Roman Banners decks are phenomenal. I absolutely love the design of these decks. So what do? They kind of focus on building, and like building bigger buildings or building for like the extremes. So one of the decks has the different resources. It has like the fruit and the wood and the stone. And the first building you build of that type costs 1 fruit. The second one costs 2. The third one costs 3 and then 4. But then they trigger off the number of buildings you have. So it might say like, oh, you get 1 point for every building of this type. But in order to activate it, you have to use 1 resource for every building of this type you have. So you can get 4 points, but you have to spend 4 resources or something like that. So it's encouraging you to like build strong in one category. It's really neat. I really like that one. We played last night, and I think I outscored Kathy 60 to 55. So that one didn't quite work as well, although 55 points is a lot in that game. She had a lot of cards out there. It's a tricky one to figure out, like, do I want this card or do I not? And you're really balancing, like, cards with resources, with what I can spend, with what I can get back. So it really makes you think, but it's really fun. And then the other deck has you lay foundations. So in order to build a card, it has a foundation requirement. So every card has a foundation type on the back of it, and there's 2 different foundation types. I don't know exactly what they are, but small foundation, large foundation, something like that. And so a card might say, oh, in order to build this, you have to pay these resources, plus you have to have three small foundations. Now, where it's really clever is I can collect those foundations. I just take a card off the top of my deck and play it face down. Let's say I have two small foundations, but I need three. I can discard one of my foundations to count as an additional. So I had two, I discarded one for a third, now I can play my card, but I only have one small foundation going forward. So that's really interesting because now you've got to make your decisions based off of that. Like, do I really need this card now and hinder playing these other cards later? And then, boy, some of the cards are like really powerful that you can get out and you're like, I could do that ability? Which is so fun. It reminds me of Buildings in Glory to Rome where it's just like, this is overpowered, but I had to do all this work to get there. So just really well done. And I feel bad that I cannot remember the designer of these, what her name is. I know she's one of the original designers in the game. It's just not jumping to me, but I'm thinking of listening to Board Game Insiders recently where Ignacy was talking about how he gave her the chance, just you go and create two factions, and she created these, and they are so good. They're two of my favorite factions in the game. So the Roman Banners factions are even better than the ones in the base box. And this is quickly rising in one of my favorite games, the Empires of the North. It's really fun to play solo. It's great two-player. I would admit it, three and four player, it's fine. Three is probably fine if everybody knows what they're doing. Four is not bad, but you don't really interact a lot. So I could see that being a negative for people. But boy, I really like this game. And I don't know that I was there when I played it. I played it at like 1 o'clock in the morning at Dice Tower Con with Eric, who had a copy of the game. The only one at Dice Tower Con, and I got a chance to play it and whatnot. And I'm really thankful. But at the time I was like, okay, that was cool. I see what they're doing. Good job. But now that I've played it a bunch, it's like, wow, do I love Empires of the North. It's super good. And that's the Roman Banners expansion from Portal Games. All right. Next up here, I'm going to go through my other top games, although I realized I did not put these in order. And I have my list of all the games I really liked from 2019, so I'm going to have to kind of pull out them. So in no particular order, probably somewhat order that I played them. No, it doesn't even look like that. I'm going to go through. Wow, I got a lot of games on here. All right, here we go. So these are the other games I thought. There's 37 total games. Woo! And 10 were my favorites of the year. I'm not going to go back through my top 10 of the year. You can listen to that episode. So we'll jump around. So first up, I have Sorcerer from White Wizard Games. It's essentially a two-player card battling game. Boy, the theme is harsh. It's, you know, it's really dark and evil. Kathy's like, oh, how do you know I wouldn't play that? And then I got a copy and took it out. And she's like, yeah, I don't want to play this. You know, flesh falling off bones and all this stuff and pentagrams. But the gameplay is really good. And it's a lot of dice rolling and just luck. But I couldn't believe how much I really enjoyed that. So I know that I tend to come across as a Eurogamer, but I there's times I just love rolling dice, the tension of doing that. So Sorcerer, I really thought was going to be a top 10 game of the year, but as more came out, as happens, especially when we get to Gen Con and Essen, things just fall. But really loved Sorcerer from White Wizard Games. Hadara, I think, was on Brian and Larry's list, but this is a card drafting Civ game. I liked Amul better, but most people like Hadara. I really enjoyed Hadara. I got a chance to learn it at Dice Tower Con and have played that a bunch, and that is really it's fun. It's an engine build, which I totally love. So that was a really neat game. Hadara, Z-Man Games. I'll try to remember mention who they are. Then barely not making my list, I know, is Taverns of Tiefenthal, again, which I got a copy at Dice Tower Con, and that's been a really fun game from Wolfgang Vorsch that I like a whole bunch. But you got to play it with all the expansions. So now that it came to North America and people are playing it, they're not playing with all the expansions. They're going, it's okay. You got to just throw them on. Just do it. Jump off the ledge. Throw them all in. Really good. I mean, maybe play an initial game without them and then just know it's going to be better. But they're so easy to play with. Like, so easy. Next up is Res Arcana, another game I thought was really going to be in my top 10, but it didn't make it. So this is from like Sandcastle Games and Tom Lehman. Just a really cool engine build. The expansion just came out, so I played with that. The expansion is just like, here, shuffle these cards in. Here's a few more tiles. I mean, it's totally what you want, these types of games. Add a couple things. And it's just like a race to 10 points. Really neat. Tapestry. I really end up liking Tapestry. I thought it was very good. I know it kind of got knocked for not being a Civ game, but it was very clever in what you're trying to do. I mean, I guess in the world of Civ games, whichever. But this is from Stonemaier Games, Jamie Stegmaier. Really neat game, Tapestry. Oh, that was in my top 10. That was in my top 10. Ecos, The First Continent. Yeah, really cool bingo game. I remember hating that Rise of Augustus game, which I guess maybe I need to go back and play, but whew, I thought that game was bad when I played it. But Ecos is fun. I mean, it's totally bingo, and you're just hoping that people draw the right things. But it's fun to, like, build your little engine of, if I have these cards and you call the right things, then I'll be in a good spot. So it's a nice, fun game. It plays pretty well at high player counts. So I thought that was a pretty good game. I didn't really contend for my top 10. That was part of it. My top 10 was basically set. Taverns was close. Res Arcana was close. Sorcerer didn't end up really being there. Blah, 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 blah. QE is so good. It's such a good auction game. The only reason this one doesn't really rise above for me is it just dies with other people. We're Doomed has gone over better. QE, some people just don't want to do this auction. This is the game where you could bid whatever you want. And, oh, just in the right group. I mean, this is a convention game. Like, this is just, you have the right group. It's just going to be so hilarious. You can just play so many times. Really good. Irish Gauge is a super clever, winsome game. Mason's been talking about a whole bunch of winsomes lately. So Irish Gauge was really good. That's from Capstone Games. I like that a lot. Auction, straight up an hour. Yep, it's like, boom. The only tricky part is towards the end, last 5-10 minutes, you probably know who's going to win, and you're trying to do something to stop them, but you most likely won't. But it doesn't matter. You still had fun up to that. Artsy was really good. I believe it's J. Alex Cavern. I think so. And it's Renegade. And I thought that was a really fun game. In fact, I haven't played that in a while. I just saw it, and I was like, oh, I want to play that again. Another game that was great two-player was Foothills. And this is Tony Boydell, and this is the Snowdonia two-player game. Really clever card-playing mechanic. Upgrade, gain your actions, figure out how to score points. It's like a point salad. Really good. Again, it's that two-player, like, when am I going to play this versus that versus the other thing? Although Kathy and I like to bounce around. It's like, we'll play Keyforge, and we'll play Foothills, and we'll play these other ones. So, kind of neat. Probably, actually, you know, now I'm looking at this, Point Salad was probably pretty darn close to being in my top 10. That's a really good light game, Point Salad is, just collecting all those. The only rule I don't like is the build the deck around the number of players. I just shuffle and go. Whatever, two players, there's a ton of cards, our scores are going to be really high. Doesn't bother me. Horrified was another awesome game. I'm excited to try the, Wonder Woman one, which is supposed to be similar to Horrified. But Horrified is like the monster co-op game. Just really fun. Really, like, surprisingly hard with 4 and 5 players and surprisingly easy with 1 and 2. So its scaling is kind of weird. But you could just add more monsters to make it harder. So interesting on that boat. PAX Premier 2nd Edition was really fun. We played it twice at Gen Con, like, in the same night or in a row. I think in the same night. And I thought I would just go play this a whole bunch more, and I didn't. But it really was fun. And great presentation, so a really neat game. Another one that I thought would be in my top 10, but just didn't end up making it by the end, was Sierra West. Sierra West is published by Boards and Dice, and it just became, you could get to the end of the track every time and score, and the points just felt a little bit negligible. It kind of, actually, Colomo was the other one that felt this way too, and it's the same designer, Johnny Pack. So I really like both games. I would play both games anytime, but they just didn't, like, strike through to some of my favorite ones because I just found, oh, I could do most of what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be a little bit more limited. Pipeline, played this early in the year, thought this would be a contender for the top 10, didn't make it, but still a really good game, really good economic game. It does seem like somebody runs away with the win once they get an engine going, but that's kind of the point of the game. Like, be really efficient, spend your money wisely, figure it out. I mean, it's kind of like a business. It's like, boom, I got the best running pipeline. So it makes sense. It's a little long for that happening. Tiny Towns was that game that everybody likes a lot more than me. I played a lot of Tiny Towns 5 and 6 player, and I found it super frustrating. Like, I need blue cubes, but nobody else is calling blue, and so I'm just getting this pile of other cubes. I know I should adapt, but then it just felt like I'm building the same town as everybody else. But I really like it when you draw the cards. I like the cards a lot better, like draw 2 cards and then pick whatever you want. And lower player counts. I definitely think it's a great game. I see what people like, but yeah, I got a little bitter from those other ones. Beta Colony, again, from Matt and Ben. I really like this game. The presentation is awful from Rio Grande, but it's, yeah, it was a pretty clever little rondel, dual rondel game. Dulosaur Island came out really early in the year, and I like that one a lot. I like dinosaurs. I found out Kathy doesn't like dinosaurs, so there's a two-player game we need to get to play. Wingspan famously didn't make my list, made everybody else's list. I perfectly like the game, but I am so glad the game exists and people love it, and I hope it wins tons of awards, because that's great, and it's great for Elizabeth and for Stonemeyer. I have nothing bad about the game. it just wasn't one of my favorites. Herbaceous Sprouts was really fun. I really like this dice rolling, like, card management game. Why can't I think? Doctor. Oh my gosh. Ah, he's been to our store and I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. but this game was really good. Liked a lot. Space Corps was a really fun game in the beginning of the year from GMT. Forum Trajanum was this year, and I loved that game. That was really good. Stefan Feld. I'm getting tired. I'm sorry. I taught all day and now I'm doing this. Liftoff was a huge surprise to me from Z-Man Games. In fact, that one could have been close to my top 10 if I got a few more plays to see what I really thought. Jaws was definitely one of the biggest, like, unexpected games of the year. What a great two-player game Jaws is. That game always ends tense. Love it a ton. Aquatica was pretty fun. We got to play that at PAX Unplugged. It's got that Concordia hand management style. It was a little too short on the arc for me. I would have liked it to be a little longer, actually. Letter Jam, we played a ton. Really good kind of word game. I'm just going to put it in the word game instead of the party game category because those feel different. And Cthulhu Death May Die would be my other unexpected hit of the year because I don't like Cthulhu games, and I love this game. In fact, we got a demo copy, and I taught it the other night. It was a little rough teaching four new players and all the powers and keep all your abilities straight and, oh, you can do this and that. Still, it was like an hour and 20 minutes. Somebody died at like the hour mark, had to sit for 20 minutes. I wasn't a huge fan of that. That seemed a little early compared to other games, but it's a great game. I really like it. And then the last one I think is 2019 that I actually just played last night, and I played it several times before. It's a great co-op game. This is the Batman the Animated Series Gotham Under Siege. It might be 2018. I didn't look it up, but I know there's an expansion that just came out recently. And this is IDW and Richard Launius. And it's just a great Batman game. Like, you just feel like Batman. You roll dice, and then you trigger all these powers and abilities. And there's tons of variability. All these henchmen. Every round, you're putting out, like, tons of henchmen and tokens and all this stuff. And then you're, like, eliminating it all. It just feels so satisfying to beat, you know, most of it. You don't always beat everything, but you beat most of it. In terms of that, and that's really been one of my favorite co-ops of the year. I enjoy that game immensely. Hey, that's 2019. What an awesome year for games. I think Mason might have been right on the last episode. There were so many great games, but we didn't notice it because they're competing for each other. But right there, there's 37 games that I would basically play anytime that people asked. Really enjoyed those games. Really had a lot of fun with them this year. So I wanted to make sure to highlight those. So let me know what some of your favorites were. What were your hits? What were your top 10? What were your sleeper hits? What were your unexpected games of 2019? I know we're like cruising in. We're almost a quarter way through 2020. But it's good to look back, reflect, and say, you know what? I had fun with games last year. I think that's really important to stay positive. If you're not, then play the games from 2018. They were so good. Just play games and have fun. That's the point of the hobby. You don't need to worry about the complaints and what wasn't good and what, you know, you're going to play bad games, but that's just part of the fun. Find a good group of people to play with, play a bad game, it'll be good. All right, that'll do it for episode 147. Long have I waited. So, thanks everybody for listening. I am your host, The Brand. And until next time, I hope you step into the fort.